Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us on this month's BIC Life podcast. We're the unofficial podcast for the Brethren in Christ denomination, where we talk about life and faith in Jesus from a BIC perspective. I'm Ryan Stockton, and as usual, I'm joined by my friend, Scott McPhee. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Ryan. How's it going?
Good, good, good. I tell you, I'm a little under the weather, as is our interview guest today, and so I think I'm feeling a little jealous of you, who's actually healthy over there. But generally speaking, I'm doing pretty well.
Nice.
Well, that's great. Well, hey, listen, everybody, as you're listening to this episode, it is December. This is our December episode. We're actually bidding 2023 adieu. It's hard to believe. It's almost over. But we record these episodes a little bit ahead of time, so we're actually recording this episode in November, which is National Adoption Month. And so even though you're listening to or watching this episode in December, we're talking about adoption. And you know what, Scott? It is never a bad time to talk about this subject.
That's right.
Yeah. And so because you've been touched very personally by this topic and have a lot of experience and things like that, you're driving the episode today. So I'm just going to hand it over to you, man.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. And you're exactly right. My family and I, my wife and I my family really has been very, very touched by, this whole process of adoption. We've worked very closely with Kobe's Family Services, and that's why we're interviewing Melanie today. And so Melanie, how's it going? Just want to say good.
Happy
good,
to be here.
Good. So can you, just open up and just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and who Kobe's is and what do you do at Kobe's?
Sure. Yes, my name is Melanie Rankin. I am one of the supervisors of the adoption unit here at Kobe's. Technically, I'm a coordinator. So I oversee several of the staff that work in the adoption unit here. And I'm just about to start my 23rd year at Kobe's. So obviously, I really believe in what we do, the importance of what we do. And I think we do it really, really well as an organization and agency. So professionally, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, which means I have my master's in social work and also licensure and clinical experience. And I also spent 3 years in private practice as a play therapist, focusing on specialized kids that have been adopted and are in foster care, and that attachment and the trauma that often go very closely together. So that's a little bit about just my experience as a professional. I'm happy to be here. And this is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. So it's easy for me to talk about.
Yeah, good. Yeah. So for those of you that are listening or watching, you may not be in the area that I'm in, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. So, but that's where Kobe's is based out of. Ryan and I wanted to do this topic on adoption because it's not just a localized thing. I mean, this is a global thing. There's a real issue out there where kids just simply need families, and we're not just talking about infants or newborns. We're talking about elementary age kids, teenage kids, on up. I mean, when you work with a company or a ministry, really, like Kobe's, they talk about this whole adoption process as like these kids are gaining a forever family, and so that's just so huge. My wife and I, as Ryan already mentioned, we've been through this process with Kobe's twice. We've adopted two kids. And one of the verses that has always stuck with us, I'll give you two. One from the New Testament, it's James 1:27. It says, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. And then another one that always hit home for us, and I realize I'm probably taking this one out of context, but it's okay. It applies for us. 1 Samuel 1:27 says, "I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him." And yeah, so, you know, Amanda and I, the first 9 years of our marriage, we didn't have kids. So through this adoption process, one night we're eating cereal. The next night it's like, oh, we have to provide a real meal for an actual human being that's in our house now. So just major, major shift. So I am so happy and thankful to have Melanie, to have you on to talk about this important subject, because, you know, I realize Kobe's is not a Brethren in Christ denominational thing, but no matter where you are, you know, around the globe, I mean, there are services or other agencies that you could use. And I do, maybe Ryan and I can talk about this later. I do realize, like, you know, our denomination, like one of our core values, you know, really a lot of our core values center around, you know, loving others and providing for others' needs. And my word, that's exactly what adoption, is doing. So that was a lot.
Well, I feel like the Christian faith calls us to do that as well, right? That's not just a denominational piece. I am go to a non-denominational church, but I feel like we're all called to do that as a center of, I mean, that's what Jesus did. That's what Jesus calls us to do.
That's
so
right. Yeah.
Regardless of denomination, we all have that core belief of, valuing other people and serving other people.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes to adoption, Melanie, now this is just my perception as I've talked to a lot of people about adopting. I've noticed this perception that adoption to a lot of people equals adopting an infant outside of the United States, and they have to raise X amount of thousands of dollars in order to do this. So how is Kobe's different from that?
Kobe's, we don't have, that would be considered private adoption.
Okay.
And we actually do not have an infant private adoption program. All of the kids that we work with have been placed in the child welfare system. So they are in the custody of various county children and youth agencies. And depending on how their case goes, they might be in need of a permanent connection and a permanent family. So those are the kids that we're working with. And I received some of that same feedback, Scott, like when people were like, oh, what do you do? You know, and then I explain to them a little bit of what I do. And, you know, then I get, you know, lots of different stories about things, but there's a huge need really all over the world for adoptive families, but specifically in the United States, there's a huge need for families that are willing to adopt kids from the child welfare system that need a permanent family.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they can't be with their birth families.
The last time I looked at the statistics, and these statistics could be a couple years old, I don't know. But last time I looked, in Pennsylvania alone, there were 15,000 kids under the age of 18 that needed homes. Mm-hmm. Like needed families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That has decreased a little bit, but if you talk to any of us in the field, it hasn't decreased. That's just a statistic, right? It hasn't decreased because the need is not there. It's decreased because of the fallout of the last several years.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
There's just a lot happening in the child welfare system right now. And, you know, placements are down, things are down, but that's not because kids should not probably be in foster care. It's just because of kind of the nature of where our society is at right now.
Wow. So, I'm just curious. So for Kobe's Family Services, if I remember correctly, you work with Lancaster and Berks County, and is that it then?
No, we work with York, Schuylkill.
Oh, okay.
Dolphin, Lancaster. Lancaster and Berks are the two children and youth agencies we probably work with the most. Mm-hmm. And because we're located in Lancaster, that has a big factor in it. But we work with lots of different children and youth agencies.
Still, it's within Pennsylvania.
I would say South Central Pennsylvania. We work with most counties within South Central Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I only bring that up because often people will ask, you adopted your kids. Where are they from? Right. And I'll say, my daughter is from Southern Lancaster County and my son is from Lancaster City. They're like, really? You know, it's just like, oh, wow. There are kids right in our own backyard that need homes. And we live in a school district that is, you know, I guess I would classify it as kind of wealthy. But even in the Lampeter-Strasburg school district, a couple of years ago, they came out with a statistic where, like, they know how many kids are in need of homes. And just the other year, it was 35 kids in our small school district. Like, I think most of our LS families in the area, that would just shock them. Like, really? There's 35 kids that need homes? Like, that's just crazy. But anyway, yeah. So,
or even the amount of kids probably in that school district that need food.
Oh, then that number is a lot higher.
Food insecurities.
Yeah.
That are homeless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that are, you know, there's so, and those are the issues also that lead to kids being placed in foster care, right? But it's right in our backyards.
Yeah. So my both of my kids experienced that. Both of them would receive backpacks full of food for the weekend that they would take home for the family and all of that. And now I guess, I don't know if I want to blame COVID, but now meals in our school district are free. Whether it used to be if you were adopted, you qualified for free meals. Now it just doesn't matter. They just, as far as I remember, they made it free.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so there's this like, I don't know. What I'm trying to do here with this is just raise a little awareness. Like, there are kids in our own backyard. There are kids all around the world that need help, and we want to, you know, help with that however we can. But let's also not forget about the kids right next door.
Amen.
Can I pop in with a quick question
here?
Yeah. Scott done, I don't know what the term would be, two local adoptions as opposed to, like, you know, international and stuff. And one of the things that I hear a lot from folks who have done adoptions and all that is there is the tension of trying to navigate the relationship with the birth family, you know, birth mother or birth family, whatever the situation is. How for international adoptions, that can be very tricky. You know, it's costly to fly, you know, overseas or to negotiate a trip and stuff. But with local adoptions, I imagine that process is a little easier and a little trickier. I imagine at the same time with the proximity that one has with the local family. To the extent that whatever you want to share, and Melanie, however, you can talk to this. How have you experienced that navigating of that relationship with local adoptions? Does Kobe's try to, as much as possible, integrate these families, with the adoption family and the birth families, or how does all that work?
Yeah, I don't mind talking to this, Scott.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So that often is families that are coming in to be approved as resource parents, foster parents.
Are resource parents the same as foster parents?
It is. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Thanks. It's kind of a trend that has been pushed to kind of get away from foster care,
gotcha.
You know, but they're resources for the kids. They're posing as resources. So that's why that term is changing. Yeah, that's a big concern, and you know, it's understandable. And at the same time, in my years of experience, it's always up to the resource parents and who become the adoptive parents, the level of openness that they want. And for some kids, it's healthy to have some connection. For other kids, it's just not healthy. This is something that is the term in child welfare. It's always a case by case basis. It always depends on the child. So there are some children that are very connected to their birth families, and it's really healthy for them to have some level of connection. We're not talking about visitation every week, but a level of connection and just an openness of, you know, we're recognizing that you have a birth family. Somebody gave birth to you. And we want to honor that as well. Because no matter what, that they're always going to be their children, and those children are always going to be their parents. So, you know, there's an honoring in that relationship, but at the same time, it has to be what's healthy for everybody involved. So there might not, it might not be for years down the road that there's, you know, actual physical visits for kids between their birth family and kids. But I think the biggest way, and this has been one of the positives of social media, is that it's easier than ever to stay connected with people. So, you know, things like Facebook groups, like a private group that adoptive parents can have with kids' birth families, and they can share pictures, share updates and things that way. And the birth family can still feel connected to their kids. But it's emotionally safer way to do it until kids might be ready for contact.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I can, specifically speak to that, Ryan.
Yeah.
Because both of my kids, to some extent, still have contact with their birth families. Mm-hmm. I will say, so as parents, as adoptive parents, this was one of the harder hills to kind of get over and navigate for us, because we came into it thinking like, well, no, they're our kids now. Like, I mean, that's what the new birth certificate says, right?
Yeah.
And they are our kids, you know, they, in every legal sense, like it's as if they were born into our family, right?
Yeah. Judge says that on the adoption day.
Yeah. But so my son, who we adopted first, he was very, very tied to, and still is very tied to, his birth family, loves them. My son, without going into, there's going to be a lot of details I just can't share in this format, but that's without fine, going into a lot of details, he grew up for the first 11 years of his life in a very unfortunate circumstances. But as Melanie was saying, in his situation, it is safe for him to keep some sort of communication with his birth mother, with his sister, and even with his grandmother, but that's it. So we've kept those lines of communication open. We don't meet every week or anything like that. We see them a few times a year, you know? And we, Amanda and I, try to help out when we can, with them. Honestly, we see that, like, they're kind of an extension of our family. Mm-hmm. We're not going to, like, we have boundaries, and it's like a case by case situation, like what Melanie was saying. Like, we definitely have boundaries, but like, I definitely see them as family. And as like, maybe if you have a brother or sister, like, you know, what would you do if they were in trouble? Like, these are the discussions that my wife and I have, like, you know, Alex's sister is going through this. How can we help her out? Is it even our place to help her out? Mm. Because we didn't adopt her, and she's quite a bit older than him. She's you know, she's in her upper 20s now. Mm-hmm. So we navigate all that stuff. It was definitely weird at first, you know.
How old were your kids when you adopted them, Scott?
Yeah, so Alex moved in with us when he was 13.
Mm.
And Morgan moved in with us when she was 8, I believe. So seems like so long ago. Alex is almost 21 years old. In one way it was a while ago, but it was neat to see how like that family dynamic grew over time.
Yeah.
I will say it's not something that like, you know, if we have a family dinner, like my dad's side of the family and a bunch of us are over, like we've never invited like Alex's side to come, like, you know what I mean? Like that would be, I don't want to say weird, but like, I don't even know that Alex would want that. But we keep those lines of communication open for him. And the same thing for Morgan. It's still a healthy situation for her to continue to have contact with her grandfather. And now he doesn't live right around the corner. He lives an hour and a half away. So thank you, social media. He's got Facebook, and that's how we communicate through Facebook video chat. So,
yeah.
But every story is different, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sitting here listening to your story, Scott, and Melanie, I'm sure you've heard countless stories about adoptive parents and the relational trickiness between the two families, adoptive parents and birth parents. And it sounds, for someone who is only a birth parent, it sounds like, oh man, that sounds so overwhelming. Like it just sounds so hard. At the same time, a parent, whether you're adoptive or birth, has to make hard decisions all the time. Like it's not that, there are some that are unique to this situation, but there are also some that are unique to a birth parent situation. Like it's not that, I mean, there are things that are just hard and like I said, unique to adoptive situations. But I found myself for a moment thinking, oh man, Scott, that just sounds so hard. But then I was thinking about my own kids and all the stupid hard stuff we've had to think through and navigate. And it's like, oh, well, I guess, you know, just different, you know, same stew, different pot, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I don't mean to sound as if I'm equating them so much, but just to kind of dispel, if anyone else was feeling what I was feeling, like, oh man, that just sounds so hard and so overwhelming, just to kind of give a little perspective that's parenting. That's being a parent.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And I think, I just, you know, just kudos to you guys, Scott, because it's like Ryan was saying, it's hard. Like it'd be easier just to say like, oh no, I can't, we just can't deal with that. Right. That's just the easier thing emotionally to do, but that's not what's best for your kids. Yeah. I think it's really easy for families just to be like, no, we're closing that door. Like there are kids now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they are your kids and that's great, but you can't dismiss where they came from and who they are.
Yeah.
That's who they are. And I think of myself, you know, my own history and knowing that I'm only like second and third generation in this country from other countries, this fascinates me to know about those different things. And you can't deny that for kids, that's who they are. And that's their story. That's who God made them to be. Mm-hmm. So, and mm-hmm. God has orchestrated this story. And I've seen over and over again, you know, in even in my own life, in my own story, God using those hard times and turning them for good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. I doubt I would be a social worker and sitting here talking to you today and being in this field if I hadn't gone through my own hard things in my own life. Right. Mm-hmm. So God will use that and redeem that.
Yeah.
You know, I think of that verse in Joel, you know, how I will redeem the years that the locusts have eaten.
Mm-hmm.
it's, and I just fully believe that God will, like, yes, we all go through hards, and some people's heart is different than others.
Yeah.
But God will use that and redeem that. And he's using you and your family to do that for your kids.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah.
I say that like from the bottom of my heart as someone in the field, like, thank you. Not everybody. This is where I feel called. I don't necessarily feel called to adopt. And I don't think everybody is called to adopt children. Mm. But there are people that are and can do it very, very well. And so clearly that is you and your family, Scott. So thank you. But yes, not everybody is called to do that. We can support adoption and foster care in other ways. Not everybody has to adopt a child, because we've also seen people that aren't ready to take that on. And it's just not a good thing either.
Yeah.
So we all have our own giftings and callings. And so we just have to figure out where that is within, you know, the story of adoption. Maybe it's coming alongside someone and helping them into the supportive family so that they don't have to be separated. Because that's always, you know, the best thing if we can keep families together. But that isn't always possible for lots of different reasons. You know, addiction plays a huge part in the kids that we're seeing coming into foster care and needing permanent resource. Addiction is just it's just a vicious, vicious thing.
Yeah.
And I just look at that and say, man, by the grace of God, go I, because very easily I could have gotten pulled into something in my own life. Right. And it's just so hard for people to climb out of that. It's not just a decision of like, well, you know, do you want your kids back? You should love your kids enough. You should do that. Like it's just not that easy. Oh,
right.
If life were so black and white, that would be great. But it's not. There's so many factors that play into that and generational things. So I think that's one of the biggest things that we're seeing is, you know, addiction, it plays a huge part in the brokenness of families. I don't want to get sidetracked on that.
No,
but
that's actually, it's a perfect segue. I was hoping we could just take a moment to define some terms, some common terms in this field. So, and hopefully answer some questions along the way. So like, Melanie, can you explain, like, what's the difference between, well, you said all families are like resource families. So what's the difference between, respite, fostering, and adopting? Like what?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I know in my own life and in my own family, I would not be able to do everything that I do without support and help, right? So respite families are just provide a respite care for kids. You know, if kids need to be watched for the weekend, taken care of, or families for whatever reason can't take a child on a trip with them. Maybe their birth parents say that they can't go out of state, whatever reason, right? Well, they're still in foster care. We really need respite families to be able to just provide a place for kids to go on a temporary basis. Resource homes, foster homes, would be where kids would move, hopefully, long-term, basically until a decision can be made whether they're going to reunify with their birth family or that's not going to be possible. So we need families to be able to commit to caring for and walking alongside kids during that really hard time. And then, we are in need of people that are willing to be permanent resources for children. And it's not just adoption. We're not only in need of adoptive families. There's something called PLC, permanent legal custodianship, which people become guardians of children until they're 18. And there's some, you know, we found that a lot of older kids, they're in need of a permanent family, are more open to that option than adoption because they have very strong ties to their birth families and they don't want to lose that. And that feels like disloyalty.
Yes.
You know, if they're going to say, no, I want to be adopted, they feel like that's a slap in the face to their birth family. So, but they need a permanent place to go. They can't be with their birth families. It's just not safe for them for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So we need families that are also willing to be permanent resources for kids, and be legal guardians. And we've found through that, that obviously it's not that magic 18 isn't like resolve everything and the kids are on their own, right? They, you know, they often stay with families after that. But you know, there's lots of different ways that people can provide care for kids.
Yeah. I think, so my son is a perfect example. So, his first night or two away from his biological family was with, I believe, with a respite family until he was placed with a foster family. And it, now this family that he was placed with, that's what they did. They just fostered. But he ended up being there for a year and a half until Amanda and I came along, who were willing to actually adopt him and be a permanent. But even with us, at least the rules back then, I don't know if they've changed. Legally, we were foster parents for the first 6 months at least, because I think they have, the kids have to live in the home for 6 months before you can even start the process of adoption. Is that still true?
Typically, yeah. I mean, don't want to get into semantics.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You can start it before you can't do anything as far as filing things until that 6 month mark. But really, when you look at best practice, you should, you know, you always want to, you don't just jump right into engagement in marriage.
Right.
So we want to make sure that everything is going to be healthy and everyone's adjusting and there's, you know, just everything is working out well. So you don't want to jump into that. Like 6 months is still really soon when you think about it. Like if you got engaged in 6 months, someone might be like, okay,
yeah,
let's just make sure. Right. Like, so I equate those things a lot, because I feel like it's, you know, in marriage, you're committing, mm-hmm. you're making a lifelong commitment to be with that person through no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like adoption is very similar to that. You're choosing and making a lifelong commitment mm-hmm. to this child. And so I feel like they equate really well in an analogy of really what that is. So you want to make sure that it's going to work out long term.
But so, I will say for, you know, people on the side of like my wife and I, so Alex didn't just like move in. Right. And then that was that, like you were saying, we actually had, it was probably a period of 3 weeks or so where he came over for the day, you know, a few hours the first time. And then he came over overnight, maybe the following weekend. And then maybe for a whole weekend, the next, and then after that is when he moved in. Now, even that feels fast. When it happens with my daughter, it was even quicker than that. We spent the day with her at the zoo in Philly. And then the next weekend she moved in. That was that. So, yeah, I will say, and to answer your question from a while ago, Ryan, like, you know, if people are thinking, well, I couldn't do that. I will say, I had that thought many times prior to adoption and all of that. But the moment you meet the child, like, I don't know, but just speaking for Amanda and I, like the moment we met Alex, the moment we met Morgan, it was like, we knew, like, how could we say no? How could we not provide a home to this child who needs it? It's not about like, sure, we're not. We've never been parents before. We don't know what we're doing. We're not equipped, but we're willing. We can do this. And yes, it's been, if anybody's wondering, it has been the most difficult thing Amanda and I have ever done And yet it's also been the most rewarding thing. And several years in, it is still the most difficult thing we've ever done. There are still major things in our life that we're currently going through, but we're going through it with our kids, just like you would do it with your biological kids. Mm-hmm. I think the difference there, though, you know, if there is a difference, every kid that ends up going into the foster care system and or even adoption, all of them have been through trauma. And trauma sticks with you for years, if it even goes away. So that's I would say that's one area in our lives that we navigate that a lot of people don't know about. We still navigate with both of our kids. Trauma has just impacted them so much. You know, and it's not to say trauma can't impact biological kids, because it does happen. Sure. But I just know that if our kids actually grew up from day one in our home, there wouldn't have been the trauma that they experienced. So, so in that way, it's different. But
yeah.
Well, and I think early neglect has a big piece in that too, and how I don't want to get off on a tangent because I love talking about neuroscience, so I have to be careful. But just how the brain develops in those first 3 years of life. Right. And then and how it's wired. And then what we see in kids coming into care, it's just, yeah, that early neglect. It's better. Yes. Neglect is the worst form of abuse.
And so, it's one that most people, I don't think most people think of it as abuse. Nope. But neglect is abuse. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Because we are wired. God has wired us for connection and relationship and touch. And, you know, when kids aren't getting that, when they're laid in their crib, when they're set there and ignored, or don't have the right caretakers, or, you know, and that's, again, why we're seeing these issues. That's such a big issue with addiction. Because when parents are using, they are not emotionally available,
right,
or sometimes even physically available for their kids. And that has a huge impact. So what, Scott, what you and Amanda are doing are you're making up those times that were lost.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your kids are physically one age. Emotionally, I'm going to guess that they're not that age.
You are correct.
So you are navigating all of those pieces of, so you physically have a 21-year-old, but, yeah, but I'm sure he probably can't take on the responsibilities of a 21-year-old that grew up with nurture, attention in those first several years of life, because it impacts the brain. It actually, you have to look at it in a way as brain damage.
Yeah.
And so you have to work within that. And that's a really hard thing. And I want to go back to what you said about that 6 month, kids having to be in the home that 6 month too. Another reason why, you don't want to push that is because, you know, with infant, private adoption, you go to that country, you pick up those kids, and then you come back. Right. And good luck.
Yeah.
With I look that to me, I'm just like, wow, that's crazy. Because of all the supports you get, when you're a resource parent, you have an agency that you're working with, you have caseworkers in your home, you have therapists that you can work with. And that's the one thing I love about Kobe's, is that we have all of those pieces within one organization. We have parenting classes, we have therapists that are trauma informed. We have amazing caseworkers and staff that are very knowledgeable. You know, training families on the impacts of trauma, TBRI, all our families are trained in TBRI, which
TBRI?
Is yes, it's a modality, that really helps. It's trust-based relational intervention. And it's just been shown to be a very effective, parenting strategy for kids that have experienced trauma. So we really try and undergird and provide our families with as many resources as we can. And so during that process, once adoption happens, a lot of those supports go away because mm-hmm. they're like, well, they're your child now. Mm-hmm. So along the foster care journey, you have those supports. So we don't want to rush into, we want to make sure that everybody's in a good place for those before all of those, so not all of them, but a lot of the supports are removed. But
well, yeah. And I'll add that even after adoption, there's still supports. So our kids, we still use Kobe's for therapy, that kind of stuff. There's something called post-permanency that we've taken advantage of. So that there are resources. It's not like mm-hmm. it's just like, well, yay, you're adopted. You go. Good luck.
Yeah. Right.
So,
which is unique to the state of Pennsylvania. I will say if there's people listening mm-hmm. from across the country, Pennsylvania has the statewide adoption network, mm-hmm. Which it's called SWAN. And that's we've used that. Yes. And Kobe's is a post-permanency provider. And again, that's why I just think Kobe's is an awesome organization because we provide care right from the beginning, even past adoption. Yeah. Because we know that adoption does not wave a magic wand. Mm-hmm. Actually, sometimes it creates more issues for kids. Until they trust and realize this is real and this happened and I'm not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about your kids' history, Scott, but a lot of times when kids are in care, they're moved a lot for various reasons. Mm-hmm. When kids are adopted, sometimes, if you've been in a relationship where you've been left many times, you're not going to trust, right? Like that next relationship you're in, you're going to kind of be like, I don't know. I don't think this is really going to be for real. Yeah. That's a natural human reaction. So our kids who, have even less coping skills than adults do, they feel the same way. So they're not going to trust sometimes when you're at a court hearing and the judge says, okay, this is it. You're adopted. They're like, all right, mm-hmm. let's see if this is for real.
Mm-hmm. Just another place to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And that's something that carries through. It takes years to develop that trust. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think trust started really happening when Manda and I started being called mom and dad. That took a while. That took several years. But all of a sudden, I think Morgan did it first. And once she started doing it, then Alex followed suit. Now it's like, they can't call us mom and dad enough. Yeah. mom, so dude, good. Mom, can I? It's like, whoa, let's just, calm down.
Making up for lost time.
Yeah, making up for lost time for sure. Oh, yeah. Man. So I want to ask if someone's interested in fostering or adopting and, they happen to live in my area and are closer to Kobe's or whatever, what would they do? Like, how do they, where would they even start to find out information about, I'm specifically talking about that orientation class that you guys have.
Mm-hmm.
So if that helps. I think most agencies have that. We went to more than just Kobe's. So mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah. And there are many good agencies in Lancaster County. I just think Kobe's is
Kobe's is probably the best.
Let me put it to you this way. Let me put it to you this way, Ryan. Okay. Yeah. I know a family that went to a training over the weekend and they were approved. It took Amanda and I 6 months to be approved to have a child in our home.
Yeah.
27 hours of training. What we did was 3 hours a week. Every Thursday evening or whatever it was. So 27 hours of training, a mountain of paperwork, more than I can fit on this screen that we did. Sessions with people from Kobe's talking about our marriage. They basically, Kobe's knows everything about Amanda and I because they want to make sure that if we're going to put kids in your home, that this is a healthy and stable home, you know, because the last thing these kids need is to experience trauma all over again.
Yeah.
Scott, you can take my job.
Well, there
very
you go.
Well said.
We are very appreciative of the experience we've had with and continue to have, you know, during our, so when you first adopt, there's like this honeymoon period and it could be like a week or two or a month. And then the kids really put you through the ringer, and man, did Alex put us through the ringer. Oh my word. It was like several months straight, but we had a 24/7 hotline that we could call, that, you know, someone was on call and we used it a couple times. Trust me. Yeah. It was so nice to know that it didn't matter if it was 3 o'clock in the morning, someone was going to pick up the phone and help us. That's the kind of support that we really appreciated. But yeah, so I'm just thinking, like, okay, so if someone's listening to this podcast, and no matter where they live, like, if they're interested in more information about fostering or adopting, whether it's Kobe's or somewhere else, like, what would you recommend?
So if they're in this area, they can feel free to give us a call. Our main number is 717-656-6580. And you can very easily say, I'm interested in learning more about foster care and adoption, and you'll be sent through to the person that you need to talk to about that. Or you can email careforkids at Kobe's, which is COB as in boy, YS.org.
I've heard some people call them Colby's. I'm like, no, that's not it.
Yes, we have some interesting, interesting. It's an acronym, so it does stand for something, but but it's not the basketball player. Yeah. It's
all right, yes, COBY.
Right.
And I
right.
imagine when you reach out initially, you're not signing up on anything. You're not signing on the dotted line for anything. You're just getting information. I think that's important for people to know, because you can go into this process. You can also exit this process, I would imagine. Like, if you decide, if you start going through and you're like, oh, wait a minute, that we cannot do this in our current life situation right now, whatever it is, whether you relational dynamics or financial, whatever it is, it's okay. In fact, it's good to reach that point of discernment to say, you know what, maybe now is not the right time for us. That's part of, like you were talking about, engaging. You wouldn't get engaging, becoming engaged to be married. You were talking about that metaphor earlier. You know, that's part of the process of dating, right? Is to find out, should we stay with this person or should we leave? You know, it's like, you know, let's date this idea for a little while, see if it's an idea that we want to commit to. And that's before you even get to meeting any of the kids or anything like that. But it's an open process.
Yeah. Yes. So I have a couple more questions. And then Ryan, if you have anything you can add at the end there. But
yeah, we'll look to wrap up here soon.
So one quick question that I think most people listening to this that have never researched fostering to adopt are wanting to know, how much does it cost?
Oh, that's a great question. Wow. So to be a resource parent and approved to have kids through the child welfare system, it does not cost anything. In fact, I'm going to guess that, Scott, that you and Amanda got a subsidy.
Yes.
Once you adopted. So kids in child welfare, the majority will qualify for an adoption subsidy, because people realize that it costs money to raise kids. Mm-hmm. So you will get a per diem rate every day for the child until they're 18 years old. If you adopt after 14, that subsidy is until 21.
Yep.
And along with that subsidy comes medical insurance. Which I feel like nowadays is a very big piece, because our kids, as you said, Scott, kids in child welfare experience trauma, neglect. They're going to need mental health services to work through all of those pieces. And so medical insurance and behavioral health insurance is included in subsidy.
Yeah. Yeah. And It's not like the best insurance ever, but it's just nice to have, right? So well, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of insurance out there that's not the best insurance ever.
Like you might just need to go to the smile guys for a while, but you know, for the dentist, but that's okay. Yeah, but seriously, well, though, I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is like when people think of adoption, they immediately think of, oh, I got to raise $30,000. No,
right.
Amanda and I didn't have to raise anything. We just needed to make sure that we had a room with a bed and a dresser and some other very basic things that most people have, I think, in their house and really just a community of support. So yeah, you know, you're going to have to go out and probably buy a wardrobe because they don't usually come with a whole lot. And, but, you know, we're anyway, the other thing I would like to say, just cause it's a slightly hot topic button for me is, you know, for those looking at this, like, oh wow, I actually get paid for that. No, this is not a job. Like, no, that money should always 100% go to the kids. I mean, like I said, they literally come with nothing. So like if you're fostering or if you're fostering to adopt and your kids barely have rags for clothes, what are you doing? Because that's what that money's for, you know? So anyway.
So two things to say about that. First, yes, it's not a lot. And I'm not going to, the amount.
It's enough though.
Per kid. Yeah. It's not a lot, but you know, it can cover, you know, a good weeks of groceries or maybe 2 weeks of groceries. Right. But you're absolutely right, Scott. It's to supplement the cost of everything, you know, clothes and food and just everything a child needs. It's a lot. So yeah, and they recognize that like families can use help with that. So
yeah. I'm just trying to break the idea of like, oh, well, if I had like five or six kids and I get all these subs, like that's kind of my job. Like that's not what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. I think a number of folks have heard of abuses within those kinds of systems with that kind of a thing. And that sounds like that's not going to be an issue with at least an organization such as Kobe's that does such a thorough investigation of the families that
you never know. You never know,
but it's up to the families. Good to say it. Like it's good to, yeah. Mention.
I don't think Kobe's ever checked how we were using our funds, but you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, it's just like, you know, if you're part of a family that's divorced and you know, one parent's paying child support to the other, well, that child support is supposed to help the child. It's it's the same idea. So it's not like, oh, this is my part-time job kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And we look at family. I mean, we looked at all your finances, Scott, to make sure that you guys were in a stable place to begin with.
Yeah.
And that could take on the bandwidth of what it would take to care for a child. Yeah. So,
one last question for me, is Melanie, what would you want people to know who are on the fence about looking into adoption? Like what kind of encouragement would you give them?
I would say one, make sure that you're getting accurate information because there's a lot of things on the internet and online. So if you, regardless of where you are, there's agencies all across the United States. So it can't hurt to call and just go to an orientation session and just find out more information of what it would take to become a resource parent in the area that you live. If you're in South Central Pennsylvania, then yeah, I would encourage you to, you know, call Kobe's and find out more information. And like Scott was saying, it's just information, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so you come to an orientation session, you learn a little bit more and you might be like, yeah, we're not ready to like commit to that yet with where the age of our kids are at, or, you know, for whatever reason. And that's great because we want to, you know, help families gain understanding of all that it's going to take to be a resource parent. It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, for sure.
At all. But I also feel like if God is calling you, then really also lay it before him in prayer. And he will guide you, and he will show you, and he will lay that on your heart if that's what he wants for you. Mm-hmm. And there's other ways to help. You know, if adoption and foster care is really on your heart, but it's, you know, actually taking a child into your home is not feasible, there are many ways to help. Scott, you made me think of, we have a whole closet downstairs in one of our offices. It's called the kids closet. And mm-hmm. because kids don't come into care with a lot of things, we get donations, and kids are able to come in, and resource parents are able to come in and pick clothes and pick shampoo and hygiene products. And, you know, if it's an infant, you know, diapers, things like that. So we're always looking for donations on our website, www.cobies.org. You can find there's a link there. I think to an Amazon wish list, that you can, donate. There's many ways that you can be part of helping kids and families. And it's not necessarily having a child in your home. It could be, you know, supporting different organizations. It could be supporting a food bank. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like we said, like there's a lot of families, especially now more than ever, that are in need of food and resources. So maybe you're donating to a local food bank in your area. Those are some ways that you can help. And God calls us, you know, to help the least of all of them around us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when did I see you hungry? When did I see you in need of anything? Well, what you've done to the least of these, you've done to me. Mm-hmm. So helping families before they even come in need, you know, kids to be placed in foster care. There's lots of different ways in our community that we can kind of help with that too.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, that leads into pretty much the question that I had. You know, we talked a little bit about some of the reasons that kids end up in foster care, needing adoption. Addiction was a big one. I imagine there are financial issues that sometimes cause birth parents to consider adoption, things like that. we want the church and we want people to engage in this work, whether they choose to adopt, as Scott and Amanda have, or whether they choose to be foster or resource parents, or whether they choose to make donations, whatever it is. But what are some things that we can do? And we'll try to wrap this up here, so we'll try to keep it short and sweet. But are there some things we can do to decrease the need initially? Like, can we go further upstream? And what are some things? Is it a lot of policy driven stuff? Like, are we talking like local government action to help bring more social support systems for families in need of that? Or is it local church stuff? Or like, what kinds of things can we do to kind of decrease the need for adoption? And so basically, how can we take your job away from you, Melanie?
I think you just opened up a part two.
Yeah. Maybe so.
Yeah, there's not obviously child welfare and even mental health treatment is not something that is people are wanting to put a lot of money into, lawmakers, regardless of what state you're in. So I don't know that there's anything that we can do about that per se, but yeah, just being aware. I think just maybe opening your eyes a little bit more to people around you and maybe looking to see where there might be a need that you can fill. Can you drop off a bag of groceries on someone's porch? Even within our local communities, in our back door, I mean, if we really start noticing and looking around, you're going to be able to see a need. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe just starting with awareness and a little bit of opening our eyes up to the people around us and the people that are hurting. because if you're looking, you'll be able to see it.
So, just with regard to the whole mental health thing, that's so huge. That is so huge. My wife and I have experienced how difficult it is to find the right resources, even with help from Kobe's and all that. It's still really difficult. I want to put this out there just because I can. if you or your family are having difficulty looking for resources, feel free to contact me. I have a resource in Philly that's what she does. She connects people with the resources that are around our country and sometimes outside of our country. And she was so immensely helpful to us. So just want to throw that out there because I know as parents, when you're looking for super specific mental health resources, that can sometimes be incredibly challenging and overwhelming. And I just kind of wanted to throw that out there that from our experience, we've found a couple really good resources for that.
And that person has resources across the country and even outside the country. So no matter where you're listening to this or watching this, feel free to reach out to us, biglifepodcast@gmail.com. Again, biglifepodcast@gmail.com. And Scott can get back to you about that. So, man, Melanie, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate the work that you do. Scott, appreciate the sharing that you have. You really opened up for us, and that has really helped bring me in to understand a little bit more. Melanie, to your point, opening our eyes, right? Just open our eyes to look and see the need. I think oftentimes we get that tunnel vision. We're so into what we're doing, and we've always got a place to go and places to be and things to do. But just open up our eyes to be able to see the need that is out there. And God can do amazing things when His people see. When His people see. So, Melanie, thank you again. Scott, thank you guys so much for this episode. And we hope this has been helpful to you as you're listening to this. Again, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us on our email, biglifepodcast@gmail.com. Melanie, you gave out the email address really before, but what was it again? Care for Kids?
I can put it up on the screen too.
You can put it up on the screen? Okay, cool. So Scott's
got
this.
But for those listening,
For those listening, it is what again?
careforkids@cobys.org. And Cobys is COBYS.org.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, everybody. We will see you again next month, which will be next year for our January episode in 2024. Thanks, everyone. See you later.
See ya. Thanks for listening to the BIC Life Podcast. Brethren in Christ churches exist to follow Jesus, serve others, and make disciples. If you're looking for more information about the BIC denomination, or if you're looking for one of our local churches, head over to bicus.org. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the podcast, you can do so by emailing us at biclifepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.